Quest Podcast.
I'm Mickey.
Joe from Cincinnati.
I'm Darren.
And I'm Benjen.
Nice. So when you're gone, you're going to give me 2 power? That sound good?
No, I'm never leaving.
Yeah, okay. Well,
we tried to get rid of him. He just doesn't go.
He just doesn't keeps going
and
back.
And the Danny came back. So Mike will be joining us later. For right now, we've got one of our local metamates, Darren, joining us. He just started playing the game with 2.0, and has been pretty much our stalwart Martell player this whole time.
I've been Martell before Martell was cool.
Yeah, pretty much.
So you're officially outnumbered 3-1 in terms of new to old players.
Which is perfectly fine by me, honestly.
Feeling the pressure?
No, the more I play 2.0, the more I forget about 1.0.
That's good, because people are kind of sick of being
I'm kind of sick of it. It's an irrelevant game. I don't even know what to do with my old cards now.
Well, I imagine save them and try and sell them as antiques or something.
No, no, does that work?
They burn pretty well.
They do. They definitely do.
And cardboard's a good fire starter.
Yeah, make a lovely poster.
I could. I could cover a table and then lacquer the table.
Lacquer the table.
Yeah, like, you know, with all the good card art that was in 1.0. There was some pretty decent.
So would you cut out the card art?
That's a lot of work, now that you mention it.
Yeah, but, I mean, you don't want the text.
I mean, it's a huge box. Like, I don't know what to do with it. I have no idea what I'm supposed to do with these cards.
Box.
It's a huge box.
What are we talking about again?
I lost my Wait, what kind of podcast is this?
Something about
soothing sounds of Joe from Cincinnati. But yeah, we've got a lot to talk about today. For once in the short history of this podcast, we're relevant now. Joe,
yeah.
Would you like to introduce why?
Well, this is our 10th episode, so we made it 10 episodes. We got double digits.
Yeah.
And to celebrate, we got some spoilers for you.
Woo! Spoilers!
Spoilers from the first chapter pack of the second cycle. As far as I know, these are coming out in June.
Yeah.
You know, when we asked the guy who provided them for us, Evan Pipes from Card Game DB, he said he thinks it's June. He's not positive yet. He has to wait for some purchase order or something like that, but he thinks it's June. So, sorry for those who were hoping for a 2 or 3 month layover, whoever those people were.
I think this is more exciting, though, because, you know, not only do we have spoilers, but they're coming out real soon. And these, you know, that's pretty fun.
Yeah, I was surprised because on the Facebook group, I saw some people saying, like, so can we wait a couple months so we can, like, kind of get used to this meta rather than
that's
keep
never
changing
gonna happen.
It.
I mean, there might be a couple 2 month periods, but once we get back into another cycle, it's just going to be a pack.
Yeah.
Pack.
Yeah.
But they're hoping for a break in between.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, what they've done in previous card games.
Yeah.
I'm actually okay with the constant release cycle that they're doing right now, especially with the consistency that Asmodee has brought with Fantasy Flight. I mean, we have street dates now, which is really, really nice to have at this point. So
I mean, it's super convenient. And for America. Well, other countries, they're not so lucky.
Wait, there are other countries?
One or two, okay.
Wait, have we had wars there?
I'm sure we have at some point.
Because that's the only way I would ever know where other countries are.
I mean, America's has such a long history. How can you even keep track?
Yeah, exactly.
There's, like, British people, like, rolling their eyes right now.
Isn't that the point, though?
The long history of America.
all what, 300 years? Not even.
So, I mean, I guess, should we just go into the meat of it? Just go straight into the spoilers? I mean,
Before we do that, I just want to say, as a preface, when we were, like, communicating with the person about the spoilers, they asked us, like, what we would like, and I think Joe actually requested Nightwatch. And like in the back of my head, I said I don't care, but in the back of my head, I was like, I would be cool with anything as long as it's not Lannister previews.
Well, I mean, so luckily we got Lannister previews.
Yes.
Yeah. So we got the two cards from in there. I think they're pretty impactful. One of them at least is very impactful.
One of them might. We'll see. I think it has a lot of potential. It all depends on how people want to deal with their cost curve.
Agreed.
You know, they just got Sir Ilan Payne out, and they got the Mountain, and then whatever they get from the banner. So it's a 5-cost character, so it's not huge, but you still have to make some choices.
Well, I guess if we're beating around the bush on this one, without further ado, meet Janice Slynn. He's a 5-cost loyal Military intrigue with two strike. I use a mercenary intimidate action. Pay one gold to give Janus Slint plus two strength until the end of phase, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, and I faded out when you were reading. Unique and loyal as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you mentioned this. Mm-hmm. Obviously unique. It'd be crazy if you had two Janus.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
but,
and I mean, what I really like about it is at the two strength, like if you see Ellen Payne across the board from him and the Ellen Payne pair is going first, Janus loses. But at
well,
that same...
Ellen does printed cost, not strength.
Oh, is it cost? Oh, that's right.
I'm relatively certain it's cost.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, oops, oops, oops.
Dave, you can cut that because Mickey's just being.
Yeah, we'll leave it in there.
I actually just built a deck with him in it.
And you still don't know?
No, I mean, I just built it.
Pain?
Yeah. I actually was going to ignore him for a little while, then I was like, wait, you know what? This takes care of a lot of hangups that I've had against, like, the Lanny Targ decks.
Just keep in mind, and remember, that it's a Martian.
Oh, yeah, that I remember, because it was in 1.0 as well.
I had a game. Oh, 1.0 makes a comeback!
I win.
I had a game on Octagon that I recorded and posted on my YouTube channel where the guy used it in challenges.
Shameless plug.
And then he, yeah, shameless plug. Joe from Cincinnati, youtube.com/JoeFromCincinnati. Watch all my videos.
Ever.
And he used it during the challenges phase, and then I was like, that's marshalling action. He just said, dot, dot, dot. And then I didn't... I just let him do it.
Well, that was a mistake.
But I was pissed off.
I forget.
So just remember, it's a marshalling action.
Does anybody have any once per on it, or if you stand him, you
can
again?
Stand him if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And do it again.
Yeah, I mean, and the beauty of Janus Slint is that it's repeatable, though.
Yeah. I was talking about pain, actually.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I'm saying, well, like, unlike, you know, his ability, just pump. You can pump the hell out of him.
Yeah. I mean, if you got Tyrion... Plus eight.
And, I mean, with Intimidate, I mean, that's great.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think it gives Lannister more tools to be annoying, but I think this is a really good fit for them right now. And, yeah, it's like a good fit for them. And
fits nice and good.
It does, it does. It's nice to see Intimidate coming into more of the houses besides Barra and, what's it called? To the house that has Intimidate.
Stark.
Because, you know, I hate Nymeria. I absolutely hate that card. It's bad enough by itself, and you're like, oh, wait, you can name one of my characters too? Great. That sounds like fun.
The only thing I really like about Janus Slint is that it doesn't make the Banner of the Line any better.
Yeah, because
yes.
It's loyal.
Yeah,
which is odd. Who would have thought Janus Slint would be loyal?
I don't know.
It's bizarre to me.
That is pretty bizarre.
Like,
now you mentioned that.
Oh, I guess he was.
He was
loyal to Cersei.
Yeah, he was the captain of the Gold Cloaks, right? Or the Red Cloaks.
Well, he was bought by Littlefinger.
Yes.
Was, right?
Yes.
So he should be a neutral card.
But he's in King's Landing, you know.
Yeah.
So there is that aspect.
And they released the Night's Watch version of it.
You think so?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess they have to.
I mean, yeah. It might be, you know, not as good because it's a Night's Watch card. It'll be there.
Yeah. And at that five slot, I mean, you know, he fits a really nice place in there. I mean, he does compete with the likes of Littlefinger, of Cereal Pharrell,
Tyrion,
you know. But I mean, it's Lannister. Like, you shouldn't have...
Well, I've always felt that Lannister, if you're ranking factions that care the least about cost curve, Lannister's probably the
best. And Tyrell.
Yeah, but...
Joe's doing two rankings at the same time. Care about cost curve and relevant in the current.
Yeah, that is.
And I said near the top. Tyrell can be top if they want.
That's true.
Give them something.
Yeah, okay. As soon as they get
top
know.
Of the boards, baby.
I just want them to have, like, yeah, I want Tyrell to have cards as good as this. Why didn't Tyrell get this?
Because then they'd be relevant.
Yeah, that's a good point. We can't have that. There's too many houses relevant.
I was upset because recently someone posted, like, rank the factions.
Yeah.
And people are still ranking Night's Watch as 8. Like, come on! Tyrell is doing absolutely nothing.
This is true. I mean, Tyrell will come back, though.
We don't know about Night's Watch yet.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see what happens after.
Tyrell has all the toolboxes needed to become a good house, I think, with, like, the Arbor and stuff. They just...
Mm-hmm.
Have Baratheon syndrome right now, where they're not getting any relevant characters.
I was watching an Octagon game, and someone played Olenna, or the Queen of Thorns,
yeah,
against a Martell player, and the Martell player did a Tainted. I was just like, oh, that's just... She's now a single icon, blank, power 5. For 7 cost. That's sad.
It's power Martell.
Yeah, I've got my Martell Rose deck ready to test here.
So, in terms of Lannister, for Dennis, then, do you really think he's going to make it into decks? I mean, do they need Intimidate?
Why not? I mean, there's absolutely no reason not to have it.
So,
you know, I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, it's Intimidate. Why wouldn't you want an intimidating character that has military? I mean, I wish he had a power, you know, maybe a military and power icon instead of the intrigue icon. But it's nice to have Intimidate and an intrigue challenge. Like, that can be very useful, especially when you really consider it. The only houses that can really keep up an intrigue right now are Martell and maybe Tyrell. Once again, I mean, how relevant is that? But still, Martell and Tyrell are the only two houses that can keep up an intrigue right now.
Yeah, Tyrell doesn't even, I mean, that, it's kind of a misnomer to call them a good intrigue.
They have strength pumping, which is the thing.
Their intrigue icons are Marjorie, Olenna,
mm-hmm.
and Paxter,
the Knight. The Arbor Knight.
Butterbumps.
The one strength Arbor Knight.
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
Because, you know, Meryn, things like that, they have ways to get characters out of intrigue if they need to. So it lends them strength. Unlike
their aces both still don't have intrigue.
Yes, that is
unless you for some reason think Queen of Thorns is the ace. Which one would be like, why do you think
I think she will be eventually when there's other good characters to use her on. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to, with Queen of Thorns, I really like Queen of Thorns, but at the same time, I don't necessarily like Tyrell as a house, so it's very hard for me to.
My issue with Queen of Thorns is that as the game goes on, she gets worse rather than better. She's the only 7 costume that gets worse as the game goes on.
Sure, but early game, I mean, early game Queen of Thorns really helps out if you're able to.
If you can get a turn 1 or turn 2 Olenna, yeah, it's a pretty good play.
Yeah, why not?
But if you get a turn 5, 6, if you top deck it on turn 6, you're like, oh look, a worthless card.
But I mean, going back to it, like with the Intimidate, it messes with opponent's challenge map.
Yeah.
With all the money that you have, like, you know, if you have money in reserve, you only need to spend as much as you want. And in that case, it's a lot like Osha from Stark right now. It's like, you bring her in, and then if you're already winning, who cares? Pull her out, kind of thing. Same thing with Janice. Like, you know, you do as much, you pump them as much as you need to, so that you can intimidate the characters that you need to.
And then, you know, if you have Tyrion out, you do an intrigue,
yeah.
It's 2 strength, they can try and over-defend it, then you can pay those 2 gold for +4 more strength, make them a 6, still intimidate.
Exactly.
Or if they defend for 7, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And you win.
Yeah. Like, why, yeah, and that's the beauty of Janice. So that's what I really, really appreciate about him. And so I think he will be an impactful card, and it will be nice to, I mean, see more Lannister fealty decks coming around again. And just
will it?
I mean, it will. Yeah.
I don't think it's gonna make fealty any more attractive.
You don't think so?
Because
there's still not a lot of power. There's not a lot of power icons in fealty for Lannister. That's
you don't need to be fealty to play him either.
Yeah.
He's 5 cost, but Mercenary, do you think that's going to be any relevant at all? Braun is a mercenary, too.
Yeah, I mean,
and
at,
I think
the
Sellsor is a mercenary.
At some point, they're going to have to do something with it, or, I mean, they'll just leave it there. They're giving themselves options with the mercenary trait. I mean, we don't really see anything truly happening with it yet.
So without looking it up, that's like 3 mercenaries in Lannister.
Yeah. Maybe they'll do a hot pie for it. You know,
maybe their box.
Neil and Mercer,
maybe
you know,
maybe the big box they get that's supposed to be coming next, according to some Italian distributor.
Oh,
have a bunch of mercenaries.
Wait. What's this about?
It was a while back. Apparently, some Italian distributor spoiled that the next big box is Lannister.
How would they?
No, I think you might have been caught in the trap, Joe. Someone posted on the Facebook group a while back. The old box.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like the. Hey, look at the next. They've just announced the next box, and it was the Lannister box from 1.0.
No, it wasn't an official announcement. It was just some dude said, some Italian distributor said Lannister.
Okay, that's totally reliable as well.
Right. Yeah, and I said the same thing, but if they were to do it for some reason,
mm-hmm.
I bet mercenary would become a keyword.
Yeah, I don't see why not.
I think if Lannister gets a second big box, that might be my like opportunity to just leave this game.
Really?
Yeah.
At that point.
Oh. Yeah, I agree to an extent. I wouldn't quit the game, but I definitely watch it from the sidelines. I don't need more Lannister. I really don't.
That's fair. I'd be pretty happy with it.
Yeah, I know you would. All right, let's move on to the next one.
All right.
Well, can I just ask a quick question about this card as well? Do you think that it does take away some of what Lannister does by allowing them to ambush in more characters and like add to Tywin's strength?
It doesn't. It just gives you more options.
Yeah, it's all about options.
Yeah,
that's true.
I mean, if you have a guy in hand, you can ambush, or you can pop up Janos. It's better than not having either one.
And Lannister's thing isn't really necessarily. Yeah, they have two characters that ambush, plus an attachment that ambushes. I wouldn't really call that their thing right now. They just happen to have the most ambush.
The only way it could diminish them is if certain players get more choices, they start making bad choices. But that's not a problem with the card. It's a problem with the player.
Yeah, but that can't be discounted. Mistakes are part of the game. True. But this card kind of just continues the whole trend of Lannister doesn't really have a theme. They just have good cards.
They have a theme. Just gold. Do whatever you want with it.
Yeah, it's like Mantis and L5R. You just have more money than
anybody. Stop bringing up L5R on this podcast, Joe.
You know what, Dane? I'm going to do whatever the hell I want. He keeps bringing up 1.0. It's approximately
that's at least relevant.
Yeah, at least it's the same name.
I think people will appreciate the L5R references.
Actually, you know, I can test that. I'm really curious. How many people actually appreciate the L5R references?
What, are you going to make a poll?
Yeah, let's do a poll about it.
I imagine most people would just appreciate anything I say.
Oh, okay, fair enough. The luscious tones of the voice. We live for it. Well, let's move on to the next card, because I mean, you know, right now, it's a good landing card. Now, we've got another good landing card, which, well, circumstantially good. This one is... Levies at the Rock.
This card makes me happy and upset at the same time.
So it is a zero-cost, non-loyal event reaction. After a player initiates a challenge against you, move up to X gold from that player's gold pool to your own. X is the number of attacking characters. That sounds great on paper. Or on card
stuff.
Sounds
okay on cardboard.
Yeah. I like it. I mean, I think it's a way to get, you know, if someone's holding on their two gold, and, you know, they're waiting to put to the sword, you're like, I'll take your money.
So
and then you shove it up Janos' guard.
This ties into something that I've had a conversation with a few people, and it's definitely not the majority, because if it were the majority, I would question the motives and intentions of the people that play this game. But some people who are playing Lannister are taking treachery out because they just need to stick more good stuff in. So if treachery can't make a Lannister deck, how would this get made?
Yeah, that's the part about this card that makes me happy is that Lannister did not get two extremely playable cards in a pack again.
Yeah.
The part that makes me angry is that I feel like it is just a better loop. It's easier to trigger, has a better ending effect. So I'm like, God damn it.
Yeah.
It's like the card is unplayable, and yet it's better than a card in another faction.
And loot is use opponent's gold to...
No, loot is after you win an unopposed
challenge. Yeah.
Basically, spend all of your opponent's gold and discard that many cards from the top of his deck.
Sure.
So it's a gold drain, but it's harder to trigger.
Yeah, it's harder to trigger, right now there's not a whole lot of synergy with discarding cards from your opponent's deck. Maybe they'll get more later. Right now, it's just like you're on.
Now this card comes
but
along.
This is like they attack me, I take gold from them, and I get to keep it, so I can spend it on Janos now. It's like, God damn it. And it's not like after you lose a challenge or something like that. It's just like beforehand. So it's like
after they initiate.
It's like you do a military challenge, I take two of your money, use it to pump up my Janos, and then I block. And you're like, you didn't have two money before, so I didn't take that in consideration, my man.
And then to add to that,
thanks.
It's a challenge. That's annoying.
Challenge. Yeah.
I mean,
it's not like during an intrigue challenge.
It basically has no restrictions.
Yeah.
So it's just annoying.
I think I like it.
But at this, I'm with Danny. I'm kind of mad and happy about this card because on the one hand, I don't think it'll be played that much, but when it is played, I'm like, oh, fuck, am I supposed to do this?
Well, I think the drawback of it is a lot of the reactions that happen. Like, for example, I know, like, Martell is full of events that don't happen really during Martell's attack. So they don't care quite as much. I mean, granted, they may want to tier as one of your characters, but what they really want to do is Aaliyah's Revenge or the I can't think of the name of it, all of a sudden, when they can kneel, when you lose a challenge, they name a challenge type and you can't do that type of challenge.
Bench on a broken.
Yeah, but nobody wants that.
Yeah, and so, you know, the other thing about this is, though, the thing about Levies of the Rock is that it fuels aspects of Lannister's machine that are already in place and still there.
It's a good card, but yeah. I don't...
Tywin, I mean, it gives him more strength. It gives Janos more strength on top of that. It allows Lannister to play Hand's Judgment, Treachery, all that kind of fun stuff. And so, it really...
Our own foot to the sword.
Yeah.
It is a good card. I've already said that, but I feel like it's worse than most of the suite that Lannister currently has available
to.
So,
that's fair.
So, one thing you notice about Lannister is that... they don't care about saving gold.
Yeah, that's true. That's the other thing. So, like, I feel like Lannister's got the gold. I'm more worried when Lannister gets more things they can do with gold than when Lannister gets more.
Yeah, with Tyrion, it's like they're already getting 4 gold per challenges unless you do an intrigue.
Yeah.
And then if for some reason you're playing that sellsword, if he dies, you get 2 more. So
wait. Really? Someone's going to play the
sellsword? I think they would play this card before they played the sellsword.
I'm speaking in terms of theme. So they have this theme of, I can spend all my money and still have money for challenges. So then they have this card, so at any point, they can just generate gold for themselves.
Yeah, well, I mean, when their patriarch shits gold, of course it's going to be all over the place.
But he doesn't.
Yeah, that's true.
He just shits shit like everybody else.
So we'll find out.
Yeah, I think I see your point with it, and I agree with it. Like, it is a card that's there that may or may not see play. Kind of like
Trial by Combat.
No, Trial by Combat.
That's another one that it's a good card.
It's a good card,
somehow doesn't see play.
Doesn't see play.
I've been hit by the Cersei Trial by Combat combo.
Yeah, there's like the Shaga deck that plays it. But.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, it is out there. Is it an amazing combo? Yeah. Is it going to be better than, you know, Lanny Kraken, Lanny Dragon, any of those? Maybe. You know, but the thing about it is, yeah, with decks like this, it's almost seeming like they're moving towards like a Lanny choke deck. And Lanny's getting, like, I don't know, I think this card could...
It's a one card.
I think it could facilitate it. Like, you know, the way that that old Night's Watch Kraken deck worked, it was one card that really facilitated that from Kraken.
You could do Night's Watch Lannister, Lion, and then use this card.
Yeah, I mean, there's aspects to it that, you know, can facilitate choke a little more. And I think, once again, because it's a better loop, essentially... You know, you don't have to worry about it as much, and it's just one other thing your opponent has to watch out for. And I think in those types of applications, we're going to see something completely random come up from around the start. Because there's plenty of times where I save gold into the challenges phase, like, ooh, I'm going to play this book to the sword, and then Levies of the Rock occurs. I'm like, I'm not going to play this book to the sword.
I'm pretty sure no one's played Levies of the Rock.
Oh my god, it's the anti-Lannister meta. If you're playing Lannister, you play this to beat other Lannisters.
Lannister's metaing against itself at this point.
Yeah, why not? I mean, I think I love the idea of
just joking. If you have 4 gold and you attack, like, Lannister, does a Lannister ever have to attack with, like, 4 guys in one challenge?
No.
So you'd be taking, like, 1 gold away from the other player.
Sure.
It's going to hurt other houses way more than it's going to hurt Lannister most of the time.
True. Well, that's true. You know, if you have an event...
I mean, how many times have I can't even count how many times I've fueled my events by doing my intrigue challenge first with, you know, Tyrion getting that 2 gold, and then I do the next challenge and, like, gain that 2 gold facilitates my put to the swords, my tears of leaves, my treacheries, and then doing that military challenge fully expecting it. Someone's like, Debbie's at the Rock. I'm like, my money's all gone. What the hell am I gonna do?
Well, if you're only doing one...
There's no other way for someone to pull money out of my challenge, you know, for me to, like, get these abilities off. The only way they can do it is by having the gold to Hand's Judgment, you know, my event. But this way, it's just like, nope, just take all your money.
So are we talking ourselves into actually liking this code?
I like it.
I don't like Lannister in general, so there's no way I'm actually like this card.
I mean, I'm in the same boat. I mean, if this card were great, I still would not play Lannister.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, so would anything make you guys want to play, like, try out Lannister?
No, not really.
No, that's fair.
Oh, I guess if they were... If there was, like, a balanced play field, I might be able to give it to Lannister.
If their deluxe box introduced something completely different.
Like what? Like a new mechanic? Or
a new mechanic, a new type of a way to play.
Yeah, a new archetype as opposed to just flopping things.
I play goods cards is not really a fun way to play this game.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been a lot of, I've been involved in a lot of discussions about that lately, about how the card pool is it the player or the deck? And, you know, a lot of people,
I think it's
I
a
think,
lot
I think a lot of people are moving towards that, it's the deck itself, because, you know, when you have houses like Barrow, houses like Lannister, and now, you know, this, once again, this is a discussion, it's not, you know, nothing set in stone, but a lot of people believe that it is not necessarily as much player skill. You know, obviously, two people of equal play skill, and, you know, when you have that, when you just can take that for granted, sometimes the deck itself, like, what am I trying to say with this? That
you're trying to say that the cards are too powerful.
Yeah,
I'll give you.
Point.
I'll
yeah.
give you. I'll give yeah. you a perfect example of player skill being important.
Yeah,
I was playing a game, and the guy
Shameless in
same,
Cincinnati.
It was on my YouTube channel.
Yep. Shameless in Cincinnati hashtag.
Hashtag Shameless in Cincinnati.
Yes, exactly.
And it was during our first no turn, and I had Maester Aemon and two Rangers, and he had Jamie and like an intrigue icon. It was like Littlefinger, I think. And Will says, if you lose an unopposed challenge, you know, lose, you have to sacrifice a ranger.
Yep.
So if he had done an intrigue, and oh, by the way, he had tainted Will, so I had no intrigue icons. If he had done Littlefinger first for intrigue, gotten unopposed, I would have had to sacrifice Will, then he did a military. I would not have been able to do what I did. What I did was he started with Jamie military, and then I just knelt the two rangers and killed him with
sure.
Watcher on the Wall. And then he did his intrigue, and then I had to sacrifice Will. If he had done it the other way around, he'd still have Jamie, and he might win that game.
Sure.
So that's player skill defining the game.
Now, now two players of equal skill, you give one player a Barrow deck, you give one player a Night's Watch deck, who wins every single time? Answer.
Holly Brown.
And that's the thing. I mean, it's not a matter of and
so you keep saying players equal skill. That means skill matters.
Sure.
If you give a garbage player Baratheon,
Popeye!
I can probably still beat him with my Night's Watch. In fact, I've beaten Baratheon before. Just playing it, I can tell. You know, this guy just doesn't really have all that much experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like leaving your Robert Baratheon open to Tears of Bliss. Game over.
Yeah.
Not because my deck is better, just because I know how to play my deck.
Sure, sure. I mean, I don't know. I think as the card pool grows, and I mean, that just sounds like such a cop out. As the card pool grows, when
it
they
is.
Keep, yeah, and when they keep getting
everything you say is a cop out.
Yeah, I'm starting to understand that. and so you know, as they give these houses more and more amazing cards, it's just. It seems like the deck building aspects of it are just kind of, you know, not even relevant. Okay, so Lannister with a banner. Woo!
Yeah.
Like, that works. So
or
let's flood,
something
let's flood
with a lion banner.
Yeah, let's flood the field with it. I mean, hell.
It's like, but.
it's shameless.
It is.
Put
it
Tyrion,
is.
Tears of Lys, put to the sword, and Tywin in a deck, and then just fill out the other 48 cards.
Exactly. Exactly. But and on top of that, and so it'd be nice. It's going to be neat to see, and I think Joe, you touched on this as well with the Lanny box, how they're going to flesh out Lanny even more. Because at this point, you know, our only real option is.
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to wrap my head around the game for a while because I don't actually play the game a whole lot, but I try and like run through like best worst case scenarios in my head.
Or
when
you
I
don't
build,
but then you just don't play.
Yeah, but it's because I kind of like pre-play games out of worst case scenarios, and I look at a deck and I like this deck can't deal with this and this. And usually in a game that works out for me because I usually find something eventually that I feel has less vulnerabilities than other decks, but. Just they've designed themselves into a really weird fucking corner right now. Because it's like, I'm trying to come up with a deck. I'm like, I want to play Martell. And I look at my lineup and I have like 10 cards that are like 6 cost or over. And I'm like, this is really good. These are all really good. Except there's so much freaking target to kill in the meta.
Yep.
I don't think I have, I could put like bodyguards in here. But that's 3 cards out of 60. I don't draw them. I have dupes, but if I don't draw them, I get killed off. Do I run a close call, but then I have to redraw the card, I have to buy it again.
Yeah.
And then so I go through all that, and I'm like, all right, so maybe lots of big characters is not the way to do it. And I build another deck, and I'm like, okay, so if target kills problem in the meta, I just do like a rush deck. Oh, wait, there's First Snow of Winters.
Yeah.
So it's like, then it's like, what is in the middle? let's play like a deck that has lots of 4 and 5 costs. Oh wait, there is no faction that just has tons of like 4 and 5 cost guys that are like at least decent. Like
Lance is getting another.
That's the problem. Okay, fine.
I don't want to play
Lance. And Baratheon. I mean, I love City Watch. I mean, they're great cards.
Okay, so they do have cards at the 4 or 5 cost slot,
and Martell.
But I'm just, they just don't do anything without help from higher cost cards.
Sure. And, I mean, I see where you're getting at.
And, yeah.
Makes,
I mean, so I end up just like psyching myself out, and I don't actually feel like ever playing the game.
I mean, I wrote an article about my worries about targeted kill, which you can find on wardens.us.com.
Shameless in Cincinnati.
That's a good plug. I'm behind that plug.
Yeah. I'm getting good at them anyway, and people mostly told me like, shut the fuck up, Joe. Like, you don't have to worry about it. But I mean, like Danny's saying, I mean, you have big characters that you want to play, but then Miri can kill them, or Tyene can kill them, or you know, and all that. And then you have rush decks, and then for Snow Winter, stops that. You can play Forgotten Plans, but then you have a 1 in 7 chance of hitting it. And, I mean, you can predict it, but you're not perfect.
The odds never seem to be in my favor in any game. No, sure.
I had a game against you where I had like 2 4 costs, and then like 4 1 or 2 costs, and I was like, he's definitely first snowing me. And then I do Forgotten Plans, and then you just did something, and the next turn you first snow me.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, shit, dude. I mean,
well, that's the whole thing when playing first snow now in the meta that's Forgotten Plans. You wait until one turn before or after it's like viable to play it.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to telegraph it too much, because that's a waste of turn. And you know what? 3 gold. I don't want to waste a turn on 3 gold.
Yeah, so it becomes this mind game where, like, did you outthink your opponent? Are they outthinking you? And then you have, like, so it's Forgotten Plans is a good counter for snow, but it's not infallible.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
So then you have this thing where you're caught in the middle of, like, I want to play high cost, but it's dangerous. I want to play low cost, but it's even more dangerous. And you just gonna get burnt out.
The worst thing about it is, and when you take a deck that is like susceptible to first snow winter, I don't want to have to call first snow up with 100% accuracy in a tournament 5 times in a row in order to make the cut. Like that's there's going to be some time where I mess that up, and that Forgotten Plans hurts me. And so, you know, it comes down to, I mean, we are now limited in our deck building options. You know, you just don't play games or decks that are susceptible to first snow, you know, until it falls out of favor.
And let's say, I mean, let's preface this by saying, first snow is only 1 turn.
Yep, exactly.
So you can recover. I've recovered from first snows several times in 1 game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it does annoy you when you like, you can't have all 3 2 and 1 costers, obviously.
No, sure.
Like you used to before first snow winter, and you'll have times when you that's what you do. I mean, you can build your deck to have 4, 5, and 6 costers, and then you just drew a bunch of small characters. I'm like, what, am I supposed to mulligan this 8 gold cost hand because it has 4 low-cost characters?
Sure.
I mean, right now, yeah, you should. But then you might draw a shitty hand because you built your deck with big costers. Maybe you get 5 big costers, you don't play one, and you get March. It's just annoying.
And it's also like playing against Martell. Like earlier today, I was testing my Barrow deck against Martell. And seeing Tyene across the board from you against a Barrow deck, it's one of the most terrifying things ever. Now, granted, you're able to kneel Tyene out most of the time, so it's not that much of an issue. But those turns where you're not able to, it really makes you take a good hard look at Barrow and how few intrigue icons they have.
Yep.
And like, you know, yeah, I'm running Little Bird. Yeah, now I'm running 3 Salises. Like, you know, I've got other ways. I'm running the full Reeler suite. But still, even with that, Barrow has not received any intrigue icons in a really long time.
Well, they've only got
Greyjoy feels.
Well, they got Renly.
Drown God.
Yeah, they have 5.
They got Renly.
Oh, we count that?
No, we do not.
We do not count Renly.
No, I don't think that's even a really good card.
Well, and speaking to targeted kill, though, there's a lot of saves out there. When you look at things like Iron Mines, you look at things like Maester Aemon, you look at ways of removing things that
blood magic ritual,
blood magic ritual.
Milk your own
that is true. And then ways of like removing the things that remove those intrigue icons, Maester Crescent, Confiscation, Rattleshirt's Raiders. It still makes targeted kill, especially like from Martell as a Martell player, I mean, as it seems like a great solution at first, but at the end of the day, you have to remember removing characters isn't your goal. It's getting to 15 power before your...
Yeah, removing characters facilitates that very well, though. Mm-hmm. And there is save in the game, but it's not nearly as plentiful as the targeted kill. Like, you named a bunch of things, but they're all from different factions. So unless I'm playing Lord of the Crack... Like, if I'm playing, like... Kraken Night's Watch or something. That gives me the largest amount of saves, I think. Especially reusable. Because the thing is, there is a little bit of reusable save, but it's extremely conditional.
True.
Barrison has to be kneeling and has to stand to save. And then Aemon can only save Night's Watch characters, so you can't even, like... Yeah, but it means that... But, I mean, access to... Yeah, unlike the targeted kill, where it's, like, you just have to make a challenge all by yourself.
You meet one of two
And it's renewable, so you can do it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And there's currently three characters that have targeted reusable targeted kill right now, is that right?
There's Mountain, there's Tyene, and Merry Master.
Yeah, three.
And then there's also Grey Wind and...
Alien
Pain. I guess that's true. Sure.
Yeah.
Which they're not perfect kill, but they kill Chuds, the military planes.
Yeah, they unfortunately.
And then, so you have those characters with reusable kill, with no real source of reusable save in sight most of the time, and you throw on Put to the Sword, Tears, and all the other stuff that can also kill people.
Doesn't the idea of Sir Ilan Payne just chopping off dragons' heads over and over again just make you laugh?
It does. No,
I just picture like a whack-a-mole machine and a dragon's head pops up.
So Mike Scow just got here. Darren, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for a placeholder, Darren.
You missed the spoilers.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Oh, well.
It's over.
It's over, Mike. Now we're just talking about, you know, how much targeted kills out there and Joe's article.
I read Joe's article.
Yeah, I thought
I'm sure you disagree with it in every single possible.
I didn't read Joe's article.
Only the parts of it that said Night's Watch were something not bad.
Now I'm wondering.
I think Mike has cemented his role in this podcast as the guy that just shit talks Night's Watch for no reason.
Well, I mean, I read it too. There wasn't that much about Night's Watch in there.
I can't even remember at this point. I do just shit talk Night's Watch for no reason, though. I don't actually think they're a bad faction, Joe.
You just think Joe playing them is a bad combination. I don't know which one's worse. Yeah, but I mean, we're basically just talking about, you know, the prevalence of targeting kill. And how saves are just way too conditional right now and don't stick around as much as a character who has a kill effect is there as long as the character's alive. A save effect is generally like a discard or a play from hand that just keeps them on the board just for a second kind of thing. And that the design choices that they're making moving forward seem a little odd. And, you know, with the... We're seeing the same houses. Yeah, now Martell is definitely a tier one house, and that's good. That's good. Is that just going to be happening with every house where they have just this very specific deck that somehow is a top meta deck?
So this might be off the rails, and I apologize, but
is that to do with L5R?
No.
Good. Go ahead.
Does it bother anyone that it just feels like we're going from domination to domination to domination in terms of like tier one decks? I mean, like for a long time, Lannister was everywhere. And now Martell is everywhere.
I will say, I don't feel like FFG has handled power creep in this game very well at all.
Yeah, I mean, like, I played two games yesterday, and they both had Martell cards in. Mm-hmm. I played a couple games beforehand. They all had Martell. I can't remember the last time I played against a deck that didn't have Martell, either a banner or the main house. Just because those icon attachments are incredible.
Nymeria
is incredible. Yeah. Tyene is incredible. I mean, it just feels like FFG is sitting in their house. And they're like,
ivory towers. Ivory towers, Joe. Yeah,
they're sitting in their ivory towers.
Thank
like,
you.
Man, Lannister's a real problem. What should we do? Let's unleash a bunch of Martell cards. Now, eventually, they're going to be like, oh, Martell's really strong. What should we do? Let's unleash a bunch of Baratheon cards. Or let's unleash a bunch of Stark cards. You know, it just feels so cyclical. Just there's not going to be a true balance. It's just going to be like this dominant faction, this dominant faction. Now, I'll admit, I've not played a ton of competitive games. I played Elfevar. I played this. I played Magic a long time ago. But I don't remember any game ever being so, you see this one clan, this one faction in every game.
Well, I mean, the thing about it is, if, when you look at Magic, when Magic does their big release and things like that, you know, their big sets coming out, there are going to be dominant factions in that. They're going to be dominant tech types that, you know, take over the meta, essentially. And that does happen. The thing that Magic does is that they release everything at once, and then a few months down the road, they release a bunch of new stuff.
You don't notice it as much because there's no color loyalty in Magic like there is in this game.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and so, and that's just and what you play with works kind of thing, or you find little ways around it and things like that. With the LCG format, we're getting a little bit at a time. So even if there's, like, you know, a dominant faction for a while, it takes a while for the meta to catch up, to find the decks that beat that, to play test what's necessary, to have the cards and the card pool in order to be more creative with your deck building. don't get me wrong, I love Thrones. I still have a lot of fun with it. One thing that I do miss, however, that I don't know if I like about 2.0 is the bannering aspect of it. Being able to play cards from out of house, while it was frankly just a clusterfuck when you had like a huge card pool, allowed for a lot more creativity in deck building. Now you're stuck with a couple of choices. You're stuck with, you know, okay, so I've got this main house, and I've got this banner house, or I've got this main house with an agenda. Now I'm still stuck with just that main house and neutral cards. There's not a lot of, there's just not a lot of variety in deck building right now.
Yeah.
And as that continues to go, like to grow, that's almost, to keep the game balanced and moving forward, trying to find this balance in the game, I think they hindered the creativity of deck building.
And
I think that will change with coming agendas. When, like, you know, we've got the army's
agenda.
As the
card pool grows.
Yeah, well, not as the card pool, boy, obviously. But as those agendas that are being, when they're doing, like, the Battle of the Trident, those three things, one allows you to have all the out-of-house armies into a single house. One allows you to have all the out-of-house knights. One allows you to have all the out-of-house maesters.
Well, that's what we think they do. I think it just that
they've kind of
said, like,
yeah, they kind of
you get
spoiled
to play
it.
Maesters from other
factions. They've spoiled it somehow going to be something like that.
Yeah.
So I mean,
and I think that's a step in the right direction. But still, now once again, you're like, okay, we get all the maesters in a pile. What's a good maester? What's not a good maester?
Yeah.
And I mean, your actual creative choices in deck building just aren't there. And I don't even know if a larger card pool can fix that.
Well, I think part of the problem is they keep printing really good cards that aren't oil. That's why, going back to what Joe was saying, you know, Lannister was so prevalent 6 weeks ago, and now Martell is everywhere. It's because they're not making decent cards loyal. Everyone wants to play those attachments and remove icons
and
out of house. Yeah, and not even terminal.
Those cards are crazy.
Everyone wants to play Tyrion and Jaime and the Mountain and the Hound out of house.
And now Alien Pain, you know, he's not loyal either.
Yeah.
So the fact they keep it, Miri?
Yeah.
Just all these non-loyal cards.
And
are part of what's screwing it up.
I think they make these cards non-loyal so that you will use the banner system. Because right now, I mean, what do you do with a banner? If you're not picking Banner of the Lion, you pick three cards or six cards that you really want, and then you just fill in the other six.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, you know, if you have a banner of, shit, I don't know, the Watch, if you're doing that, you won't do that. You get the Wall, you get Aemon, you get ranging parties, and then, I don't know, throw in some stewards and throw in some, you know, whatever.
Yeah, why not?
Get it to 12.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it creates a situation where you're kind of creating a package for each banner that is just the best in almost all scenarios. This is just what you play out of that banner if you're using that banner.
Sure. So moving forward, what do you guys think they can do to fix this? What do you think is going to happen? Because, I mean, it's not like Fantasy Flight doesn't have experience making card games.
Card pool grows.
No, I don't think, but that's my point. I don't think it's just the card pool. I think now very specific, like, mechanics need to be introduced. Very specific design philosophies need to be introduced. What they are, I don't know. I mean, I don't create games like that, you know. But these guys, that's what they do for a living. I mean, how many games does Fantasy Flight currently juggle back and forth? And we look back on this, and obviously there have been a lot of mistakes made. You know, I.e. Star Wars was a terrible LCG, like towards the end, and Conquest, things like that.
And like, why don't we take a quick break? And say, we appreciate that FFG makes these games.
Yeah. I mean, neither I played them until they just weren't worth playing anymore. And so at what point, like, what do you guys think that Fantasy Flight has to do to fix where this is moving towards?
It's difficult. I remember, you know, talking about targeted kill in my article. I was just saying, like, we're getting close to a critical mass where you can put Tyene and Miri in the same deck. You can put, you know, Mountain and this Exurion Pain in a Martell deck with Tyene or in a Targaryen deck with Miri. You can if they continue this trend of just releasing targeted kill in each chapter pack, you're going to create a situation where you can just make a deck that just murders everything that your opponent does.
And so if you want to talk, if we're talking about specifically fixing targeting kill, I think it's not that difficult. You just make a targeting kill less worthwhile. And the best way to do that would be add more economy and more like good mid cost or
card draw.
Yeah, improved card draw, all that cards. Stuff like that. So if I had the economy to just play a five coster every single turn, if you did like a challenge, kneeled like three guys and paid two gold to kill my five coster, I'd be like, that's great. Deal with this one now. Then targeted kill starts to lose sort of some of its value a little bit. But that is in as the card pool grows or as a solution. So
I also think, so I mentioned this in the article as well. Intrigue, the challenge of Intrigue, is like basically the only of the three challenges that really has a clear divide where like these factions suck at Intrigue, these factions are awesome at Intrigue.
And it's the most powerful challenge type out there.
And it's like, Tears of Bliss, name the factions that it's basically worthless against.
Greyjoy.
Worthless against.
Lannister
and Martell.
Martell. Yeah. That's really the divide. You have Lannister, Martell, those guys rule at Intrigue. And then the other six factions, I mean, with a few exceptions, are pretty much terrible.
Like Tark's not.
It depends on what you're building. Dothraki deck. It's pretty boring.
I always thought, like Baratheon's, like, we're the power challenge. Every single one of our characters is a power icon. Yeah, so it was 80% of the pool. So.
And then, like, Stark's like, I'm military.
Like
all these military monocon.
Yeah, so it is 60% of the pool.
And then what Stark can do something really interesting now, too, and this is why I think Stark is just an amazing faction. Between Catelyn and Winterfell, they can stop those turns.
Yeah, that's the only thing. That's the only thing they have going against target kill.
Stark has a lot of tools to deal with it, but Greyjoy has Iron Mines,
that stay on the board. And
yeah,
that's the thing about Stark right now. You know, we were talking about saves that have a more lasting effect. What about just prevention in that regard? Like Winterfell is just clutch. Any deck.
And then if you play it, there's that, it's like, Bow 2 Direwolf cards, cancel an event or something like that.
Direwolf or Bow 2 Stark.
Yeah, there it is.
Cancel an event for 0 gold.
I mean, why not?
Yeah. I mean, Stark, in terms of targeted kill, Stark has a ton of options.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said with Greyjoy, sure they have Iron Mines and Risen from the Sea, but again, those are one off.
Also, the fact that you put poison counters on people for Tyrell, Tyene, and Lys makes me feel like there is eventually something you're going to be able to do about poison counters.
Well, the thing about poison counters, and especially with Tears of Lys and Tyene, is that it's not directly targeting character, right? That's why the new Greyjoy attachment doesn't work against
it's stupid.
Tears of Lys.
I hate that ruling.
I hate the ruling too, but the fact of the matter is, that's the ruling. And so it is one way to get around this, you can't cancel it, it can't target that specific character. And, what would you do with poison counters, with that? Like, with the fact that you're not even targeting a character, like, what would you do with poison counters?
Well, let's just assume there would be a maester that, removes poison counters.
No, I think
it would
be more fun if you could. Though.
Yeah,
if there was something like
that would be funny.
Move a poison counter from one character
poison
to another
lipstick.
So,
but there's a cancel card for that prosthetic lips, and it just shows Robin ripping him off.
It's just like
a Batman Forever.
Yes, Joe. That's the first thing I think of when I hear a poison lipstick. I don't know what you guys think.
Anyway. So yeah, I think if they bring out more reliable saves,
mm-hmm.
something that not just one faction like Greyjoy can use, and not just one time off, like a Nightmares to stop a tiny or something like that.
Sure.
Because, I mean, one-offs, they have their place, but they're also just not super reliable.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when they have tie-in on the board, you can stop it one turn, but the next turn, then she'll get you. And, you know, I just, my point is, why is Intrigue such a clear divide? Why can't the other factions, like Night's Watch and Stark and Greyjoy, get a couple of useful Intrigue?
Sure.
Because Tears of Bliss and tie-in, let's be real, those are the main things that I have issue with, because, I mean, Intrigue is just so... Against Martell, they're going to win. With Lannister, they're going to win.
Mm-hmm.
With the other ones, they might not even be able to win at all. Depends on what the matchup is. And with Martell and Lannister being everywhere, they're not going to win.
Sure.
I think your perspective is a little off, though, because you want... I mean, what else do you do against Night's Watch? If we can't win a challenge against you unopposed, then you're just going to win the game. That's there has to be some counters to this stupid wall.
I think the best counter is just make it a bad deck.
Give us nothing but monocons.
Three turns in a row, we can't push through an unopposed challenge on you, then maybe your Night's Watch needs some dumbing down.
So this is the worst catch in the game that you guys have been playing today?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, it's, Tyrell is... I just don't know what to do with them.
But Tyrell at least has, and Danny was bringing this up earlier, at least has the pieces.
Waiting for good characters.
Yeah, they're just waiting for good characters. With the wall, like, with Night's Watch, if you give them good characters, they won't know what to do with them. Like, well, how can I afford this? Like, wait, how do I play with this character? I mean, they don't know.
More like if you give me a good character, I'd be like, wait, are you serious?
Yeah. What's the catch?
What's the catch?
The catch is it's lying.
Let me guess. If I let an opposed challenge go through, you get to cut one of my fingers off.
Just like, wait, I gotta reread the cards. What do they give them to automatically kill this character?
Oh, it kills itself if you lose an unopposed challenge.
Yeah. Damn it!
Damn you, Will!
Yes, I mean, we can just keep... It's like kicking a puppy at this point. You know, if you're into that kind of thing, you might as well keep doing it. And so, but I mean, with Tyrell, at least,
are you calling FFG sociopathic?
Yeah.
Like, the way they treat the Night's Watch, they could be. Yeah. But all that said, I still think Night's Watch is competitive. I beat plenty of decks. Baratheon's really the only faction I consistently struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
See, I think it would be hilarious if they were just trolling us with Night's Watch. Just like keep giving them cards that almost makes them good. Like, every time a spoiler comes out or a chapter pack comes out, you're like, damn, this card, it's so close to helping me.
Like with Stone Snake, it's like, oh, one icon away from being a great card. Why is he a military
monitor? Why does he climb walls
that much?
I don't mind the cost because he stays on the board during first round. I mean, why a 5-cost monocon? That's a whole other thing.
Yeah, that is a whole other thing. So I mean, we've got moving forward with it. I just really hope that they actually start listening, and or at least have this already in mind. Because I mean, they designed these cards well into advance.
Well, the first cycle was all designed at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
Essentially, I mean, I'm sure they tweaked it a little bit.
Yeah.
Making a winter pot a summer pot. Things like that.
Wait, a winter pot a summer pot? Common Velasquez.
Close call.
When
it was boiled by the Czech distributor, it's a winter pot, and they made it a summer pot. I don't know why.
I've heard all kinds of horror stories about playtesting, like certain metas got a one set of cards, and then another meta's got another set of cards. And then they just took half of the cards from each set, so they never got playtested together and stuff like that.
Why would they do that?
I don't know. It's just playtesting is a nightmare, Joe. It's like, it's very... To actually get enough data to make a good assumption about whether or not what the pool is going to be like, you'd have to have people playing it for like months, collecting like tons of data. They'd have to have like 8 or 9 different, you know. So it's like just more cost efficient to have like 3 groups of people do it, just have them send in a couple opinions and go like, you know what, let's just see what happens.
I watched an old video back before this game was actually released, like it was a promo video for it, and it showed all these like these big white boards where they had all the all the cards printed out.
I saw Tywin.
And
there's Tywin.
Well, I don't know about Tywin.
Oh god, it was terrible.
Well, I don't know about Tywin, but Tyrion.
Yeah.
It was the same thing, except instead his text was gain 1 gold after an intrigue or power challenge is initiated. And next to it, somebody, one of the playtesters wrote, "This seems strong." so they went and made it stronger. And I don't understand playtesting at all.
Oh, the playtesters, they generally do a good job. There's things they miss. I know.
And then there's things back
in
FFG
1.0,
just doesn't
I hate to reference 1.0 again, but when Bloodthirst was the huge agenda and Martell was winning with these decks where they only had 7 characters.
can you remind everyone what Bloodthirst
was? Bloodthirst, it was like after you draw 2 cards at the end of challenges if you have less characters on the table. So they just ran like 7 or 8 badass characters and found ways to keep them in play and just card draw left and right. Like the Martell player by like around 4 and like 32 cards in hand.
Oh yeah, there was no hand limit. There was a draw limit, but no hand limit.
Wow.
Which was I think a very elegant solution to some of the things that were happening, having an actual hand limit. I really like that.
But yeah, I talked to one of the playtesters about that. I was just like, how did you guys not see this? And after it was the dominant thing for 6 months, he was like, who thought that anyone would run a deck with 8 characters?
Yeah.
But generally, the playtesters, I think they do a really good job.
And it's not like they have an easy job with this, you know, trying to figure out what a meta is going to be, like months and months and months.
No, it's not.
It's a thankless job. I think it's
like
basically a lose-lose.
If you actually wanted to properly playtest, it would take a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of money. And it's just easier to make a half-hearted effort at it and hope for the best.
Yeah, just make sure the cards aren't like too overtly broken at that point.
And
so,
I mean, I guess the main thing is to make sure that the card itself isn't broken. And then combos, can't really forecast those very well.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. And I mean, because one of the things now is, with Lannister, it's like how many 7 costers can I shove into a deck? And I think it's a game I'm having a lot of fun playing right now.
It makes me sick.
Yeah, because you never know. Maybe there's just going to be that one extra one. It's like, I can shove that in too.
Do we want to talk about the regional at all?
The Louisville one, you can mention.
Yeah, we got so this coming Saturday, June 4th, is the Louisville Regional at Bluegrass Magic.
Mm-hmm.
And then, let's see if I remember correctly, check-in is at 11, hard start time is at noon, and this is the last regional in this area for the season, is that correct?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I think.
Well, there's only 2. So. 2 per area.
Yeah, it's last regional. It's not going to be like the last tournament ever, Joe. Don't get too despaired.
Well,
I mean, if you want to dry, it's like the only one within like a couple of hours from us, definitely.
It's only like an hour.
Yeah.
$15 entry fee.
Stuff.
You get a BB Barris baby card.
Bluegrass Magic. It just says Saturday at noon, so I don't know if sign up starts at 11 or if it starts at noon. I would get there early if I were you.
That's not what I was talking about. Though. I wanted like the regional problem that came up like last week.
Oh, deck list.
Oh, that was so weird.
That is weird. Did you hear about this?
No, what's this about?
I'll just go brief explanation. They did a whole tournament in a top 8. They decided to do a deck check. And 3 people had banner agendas with 11 cards from the banner house in it. So they were disqualified. And they spent about 20, 30 minutes, 30, 40 minutes.
Nate
they call it Nate French and asked what they were supposed
to
do.
The TO had like Nate French's cell phone number or something.
So they spent like half an hour trying to determine what they were supposed to do. Like, do these people just get a loss, or should they bump people out of the like next top 8 into those slots? So they eventually ended up just bumping people in, but like half an hour had passed, so a lot of people had left.
I think
when you get told that you're not gonna be in the top 8, You're usually out of the store within 5 minutes.
Yeah, pretty much.
So then they had to keep going down the list until their people are still there. So there was a lot of people. And then even they did that, the next three people they picked had like illegal desk lists or something like that.
I don't know if it was the next three, but three more.
Yeah, so they had to go down again. So there's like a big, there's a whole big controversy on a multitude of things about like doing deck checks, whether or not they should have announced ahead of time that there was a problem. My favorite thing is, it wasn't that people had illegal decks. I don't think it was a malicious. That's just like human stupidity and ignorance, basically. Like, you even have to write your deck down, so it's a perfect opportunity to check whether or not you have 12 cards.
I think people just, they built the deck and probably in ThronesDB it was legal.
I know exactly what happened. I'm not saying it's malicious.
I like this card more than this card.
They realized they didn't like one of the shitty banner cards they had to include instead of throwing 12, and then they're like, I'll just try it out without that, and then I'll add something in later. And then they never did. And they wrote their whole deck on a piece of paper, looked at it, went, yeah, this looks like a good deck, and then just handed it in. So that's just, that's just like ignorance and like bliss.
I think my suggestion to prevent that from happening is quite elegant, where you just, print it out from ThronesDB. ThronesDB has everything. They have agenda conditions. They have
Shameless in Cincinnati.
Number.
I like the alternative of having the deck sheets themselves formatted as such, where you have like main house and then another area for main house continued / banner house, and then another section for neutrals. Like I like that idea a lot.
I think you should be able to, if you impose an additional deck restriction upon yourself, you should be able to keep track.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
But that's not even my main problem with the whole issue. The thing I found most hilarious is that they decided to do a deck check at the top eight, which I don't even think is a requirement by FFGs. They've done it, but they've done it before, but I don't think it's an absolutely required by FFG, right, in the rules?
That's correct.
Okay. So the thing I found hilarious is that they did a deck check, and they didn't know what to do. it's like they made a logical, like a really nice logical jump, like we should prevent cheating by doing deck checks, but then didn't like have the follow through. It's like if you were on a baseball team and you were like, I really suck at batting, so I'm just going to go up there and swing three times, and I won't worry about what I have to do if I actually hit the ball. It's like, I'm just going to assume there's not going to be any illegal decks, and we're just going to keep going.
So then you hit the ball, and you don't.
And you go, holy shit.
Which direction do I go?
I got to call Nate French and ask him what I do if I hit a baseball.
I like your Star Trek-esque analogy for like seemingly like complicated. It's like a duck.
I'm a Riker.
In water.
Yeah. I'm Commander Rager. That's exactly who I am.
So that's what happened with some of the regionals that have been going on.
I think it was just one.
It was just that one.
Oh, was it just one? Okay.
The Missouri regional, I think it was.
Sure.
I don't know. Somewhere in the middle of this country.
Yeah.
Kansas, Missouri.
But just like, it's like funny to me. Like, should we do deck checks? Yeah, we should do deck checks. What happens to an illegal deck? I'll just worry about that. If it actually comes up. I'm sure it's in the rules.
I kind of wonder then how many people are bringing illegal decks to these things. They got six.
Just a fair amount. Fair amount. Like I said, human ignorance is stupidity.
People coming to it? I mean, there's bound to be some illegal decks in there.
Yeah, but is it like six or is it like 36? Like, if they had done checks on the other people that they hadn't made top eight, like, are they going to, like, every single deck here is illegal?
Could you imagine if you had to do, like, an entire tournament deck check?
So let me ask you a question. Did they make them deconstruct their decks and verify their deck list, or they just looked at the deck list?
They just looked at the deck list.
Yeah. Wow.
But deconstructing the deck and checking to make sure the deck list matches the deck is another part of doing a deck check.
Yeah, I don't actually. Then with that in mind, submission through something like ThronesDB, that's not a bad idea at all.
Yeah, I mean, if they could set it up,
if they can set up some sort of submission system.
Yeah,
you can do it on your phone.
Yeah, we should probably reach out to people and see if it's something that can be done. I think it would. I think, well, by we, Joe, I mean you.
I'm not going to do it. I'm not a TO.
This is the thing. We have great ideas, but no one wants to do anything about it.
That's just the problem with the world.
It's like when you read something on Facebook that's abhorrent, and you're like, oh my god!
What's so that would again? Be anything
I'm going to make a comment about this and then forget about it.
I'm going to comment about how stupid this is. Then I'm going to go back to watching porn.
does anyone in your family listen to this? No? Oh, okay. Fair enough. Well, unfortunately, that is all the time that we have today for this podcast. I'd like to give some shout-outs, if you guys don't mind. First off, to Stephen from inexistence.org, once again, for hosting our site and doing all of our tech support. I'd also like to thank Lou from the White Book for his sage advice and great conversation. Joe, go ahead.
I'd like to thank Evan Pipes from Card Game DB. He's the one who hooked us up with the spoils.
Thanks, Evan.
I really appreciate that. It's really awesome that we're being included, or that we're relevant.
We're a real
now.
Podcast.
We're a big boy now. I know.
Mike, anybody for you?
I missed half of this thing. I came in halfway through. I don't have any shout-outs to give.
Danny?
Benjen.
What about Benjen?
I'll just give a quick another little story fact, Boyd. So as we all know, George R. R. Martin does tend to take a long time writing some of the newer books. And part of it is like being busy. Part of it is like writer's block, as you might imagine. So one of the things he likes to do when he's having writer's block is rather than focus on the main story, just write short stories that are in the same universe. And it kind of like just gives his creative juices flowing, and then maybe he'll come up with something, you know. And there's a one short story about a barber that just moved to the moved up to the north, and he's trying to open up a barber shop, but he couldn't come up with a title or like a what to call his new barber shop. And he got a sudden inspiration when he misheard Ned Stark speak in public once. Do you know what he ended up naming his barber shop?
What?
Winter is Coming.
So bad.
That's probably the worst joke I've ever heard.
You just made that up.
He didn't get that. He just comes up with his own nonsense now.
I think it was any questions, any comments, anything you guys want to hear us talk about, please feel free to leave in the comment section. And
press that stop button.
That's it. Bye.